Many people look for the word natural on food labels, but it turns out that natural probably doesn't mean what you think it does. In fact, many food labels can be misleading and confusing, and most don't tell consumers what they really want to know. So on this week's Please Explain, Ravashi Rangan, Director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability group at Consumer Reports, is here to help us make sense of food labels. Consumer Reports recently conducted a survey about food labels. We'll find out what it shows and what terms like natural, fair trade, and genetically engineered really mean. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks so much, Leonard.
We invite our listeners to join the conversation. What information do you want to see on food labels? Well, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Thopate. Ravashi, is this a topic you get a lot of questions about?
We get so many questions about this. In the 15 years I've worked at Consumer Reports, every year egg labels, for example, are news. And over that time, more and more people want to know how their food's produced, and they care more about how their food's produced. And labels are really the way that are going to get them to make those effective purchasing decisions.
Why does Consumer Reports want to kill the word natural on labels?
We're fed up, Leonard. Again, after watchdogging the label landscape in food, natural is one of those labels that is vague, misleading, and just falls so short of what consumers want it to mean. And what we're learning, you know, this is yet another survey showing that consumers are actually being misled by the natural label. They're looking for it. 6 out of 10 are actually looking for it.
What do they think it means?
They think it means a lot of things. So 68% think that meat, for example, that's labeled natural has no artificial growth hormones. 70% think that that meat doesn't have any artificial ingredients. No GMOs in feed. No artificial ingredients in the feed. And that the animals went outdoors. 48% of people mm-hmm. believe that. Now, when you ask them what they think it should mean, they think it should mean even higher than what they're being misled by. But that was really a call to us. And we also asked about processed food and saw similar results.
Well, what kinds of standards are there for the use of the word natural?
Almost none. And
anybody, I could just put natural on any product that I produce?
You pretty much can.
Chocolate-covered cereal, which I'm starting to see advertised on television.
It's a travesty. The FDA regulates processed foods for the most part and any other food other than meat. The United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, has a slim definition for what natural has to mean on meat. The FDA really doesn't have anything on the books.
And what is the definition for what natural
The definition for meat, it means that nothing artificial was added to the cut of meat itself. It has nothing to do with how the animal was raised, what it ate, if it got drugs every day, nothing to do with
that. So a water-soaked ham could not be labeled natural.
Actually, water's natural. And so if you use water or salt water to pump up that chicken even 20% greater in weight, you can, in fact, label it natural.
What did your survey reveal about the information people are looking for on food labels?
That was really remarkable to us, actually, and a real mandate for consumers wanting better production practices. 66% of people are looking for locally grown. 50% of people are looking for no artificial growth hormones. Other things that were important to consumers were how workers are being treated, how animals are being treated, even avoiding GMOs. We have 72% of respondents saying that they want to avoid it.
80% of the consumers said that they'll pay more for products labeled fair trade. What does fair trade mean?
So fair trade is an interesting label that has to do with worker welfare, really, how the workers are treated, really how much they're making as well. And it also can have sustainable practices involved. We have mostly in the last decade seen that on chocolate, bananas, oranges, things that
coffee,
things we don't produce a lot of here but really come from the Southern Hemisphere where a lot of farmers are on the margins. But there are new fair trade labels starting in this country for farm workers in this country. And we can see that there's a consumer willingness to actually pay more for it.
How strict do we expect people to adhere to those standards?
Well, there's a lot of ways to get strong standards out there and strong labels. The government can put real teeth behind labels and establish standards, regulations, and required inspections. There can also be private entities that define standards, license the logo when a company meets those standards, and also perform annual inspections.
When produce is grown without pesticides, does it mean that the farm workers also have a better work environment when they plant and pick those fruits and vegetables?
Depending on which pesticides, absolutely. And the whole movement toward organic really also started because of worker welfare and using these very toxic pesticides. And when you look at the health effects of some of the real and strong industrial pesticides out there, it's the workers that are paying the price as well as their families.
That word organic has been problematic over the years. I remember during the Clinton administration, the Secretary of Agriculture was willing to loosen standards a lot under pressure from various food suppliers. But do we have pretty strict standards for organic now?
So we do have strict standards for organic right now. Now, there are still issues, and we watchdog that. The nice thing about organic is it's a label run by the government that requires public participation, and so it's accountable. There's two meetings a year that any consumer can go and testify at, and we think at the end what was really interesting about the survey is that people expected comparable things between natural and organic, and that's why we don't think we need to actually do another 12-year development for a new label like natural. It took 12 years to get organic off the ground from a law to a regulation.
My guest is Urvashi Rangan, director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group for Consumer Reports. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're talking about food labels on today's Please Explain. What are the standards for using the organic label?
Well, there are actually hundreds of pages of standards. You can't use GMOs. You can't use most synthetic industrial pesticides, no artificial growth hormones, mostly no antibiotics. There's a little bit of a loophole in poultry up to the second day of life that needs to be fixed, but for the most part, it's no antibiotics.
Why is poultry allowed this exemption?
It's an interesting loophole we came across in our last chicken study, actually, where in the law it's written that an organic poultry farmer can obtain his chicks from a hatchery that is not organic. And so the hatchery will have those chicks up to day two of life. Those chicks tend to get an injection of antibiotic in the egg and again at day one of life. And so when we were looking at antibiotic resistance patterns in the bacteria of organic produced birds, we didn't see as big of a difference as we saw, say, with turkey, which may have some slightly different production practices. So that was a loophole we came across. We've asked the USDA to close it. They've told us that's an act of Congress, so we'll have to take it to a higher level.
Are there inspections and strict oversight of the organic
label? Absolutely, there is. There are certifiers and inspectors across the country. There's probably 100 different certifiers that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is responsible for that's called an accreditation arm. And then these certifiers go out and they perform annual inspections. Those farmers have to have a lot of paperwork done, a farm plan, a hygiene plan. They're pretty comprehensive. And that said, they should be getting better over time.
Is it more expensive to produce organic products
because
they are more expensive to buy?
Yeah, it sure is. When we look at labels, and we've been doing this for years, we're constantly looking at where the conventional baseline is. And that's how we're able to decide what is the value differential that these labels are actually offering. Organic definitely is one of the labels offering a big differential. It's also one of the most successful sustainability labels out there. And we want the market in food to get more sustainable. It needs to, and it's actually brought the bottom up in a lot of ways, too.
Did your poll reveal whether consumers tend to think it's worth the higher cost to know that there are no pesticides or artificial ingredients in organic foods?
In this particular poll, we didn't ask about willingness to pay more, but we know they do empirically. I mean, the market for organic has been growing steadily and is one of the few agricultural markets that has been growing. We asked that question about animal welfare previously. We've asked that about mad cow label. Would you pay more for that? No antibiotics. Would you pay more for that? Fair trade. Would you pay more? And we always always get overwhelming responses that people will pay more for those.
Are there certain things where it doesn't really matter whether it's organic or not?
Well, I always like to say that the fresh food has more value differential than, say, the center of the supermarket. So I always say organic corn probably has more value than organic corn flakes. And that's maybe simply a matter of sort of processed food. And as you get more processed, you kind of cheapen the value, have to add nutrients back in. But for milk, meat, dairy, produce, organic definitely has a lot of value.
Chris from Connecticut has written in. He says a good step for labeling. Whole Foods has a rating system for animal welfare that's geared toward how the animals are raised.
That's right. Whole Foods has a five-step program, actually five plus. It's called the GAP program, and it's quite good, and it gets farmers in at a ground level and takes them up the chain, which is really nice. On our website at greenerchoices.org, you could actually pop in and look at this survey, but you can also see a table for chicken labels, even all the GAP steps and how they stack up against the attributes.
On the other hand, a food writer was critical of Whole Foods because they have a lot of organic things that are flown in from South America, from China. And some people argue that locally grown is actually better than organic when you're comparing those two things.
I sort of see things a little bit differently in that we have a landscape of sustainability and things are dotted all over that landscape. Is any one label everything we want it to be? No. And it's hard to get to that label. What we'd like to see ultimately are very good labels in these discrete areas. And if you see five really credible labels on a package that define lots of different things, that is the most informative way to go for a consumer.
Alice from Park Slope wants this put on a label. If the food has been grown in an area where there is fracking, fracking chemicals in the water and the air.
Well, I think she brings up an interesting point, which is that people want to know things that aren't.
It could be organic, and yet it could be grown in a fracking area.
It could be. And I think that it hits to a point where there's a lack of transparency in a lot of ways. I mean, that label would be hard, but if you use antibiotics, for example, in meat on animals, you don't have to label that. And yet 83% of consumers actually want that kind of labeling, just like GMOs.
Greg from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to point out the USDA does not directly certify any product. It goes through certifiers, where the certifier has to go through some not a very complicated process to become a certifier. Anyone can become a certifier, and it's very flimsy. And the certifier, you know, if you go to a farm, he can come to visit once a year, and the product manufacturer pays the certifier, and the certifier, you know, has a conflict of interest because they're getting money from the farmer or the product maker. And, you know, if they see something, you know, that's $5,000 or $3,000 or whatever they charge. There are hundreds and hundreds of certifiers, and no one's monitoring it. And there are products in Whole Foods that are, you know, not organic. And, you know, they're just taking the money, and they're certifying it organic, and it's a scam.
Well, I think your caller has very high standards, and that's good because that's what keeps things honest out in the marketplace. I think where maybe a little clarity needs to be made is you're right. The certifiers are accredited by USDA. The USDA is not out there certifying. But those certifiers are required to meet a lot of different standards in order to certify those products. Is it perfect? It's not. But you know what? I'd love your caller to come to a National Organic Standards Board meeting and testify, too.
Don't the New York Green Markets also check to find out whether something is organic, whether the farmers are living by the rules of organic?
The green markets include lots of different farmers, you know, local farmers who might use pesticides, organic farmers who are certified biodynamic
farmers.
But I mean,
they won't allow
farmers.
Somebody to put organic on their stand if it isn't truly organic.
That's against the law. Now, do people do it? Sometimes, but it's actually against the law.
Let's take another call. This one is Zon from the Bronx. Is it Zon? Zoe.
Yes.
Hi, Zoe.
I noticed that the main label on products does not necessarily correspond to the ingredient panel. For example, I bought cereal, Honey Bunches of Oats, And when I opened it up, I had a dish of cornflakes. And then you look at the ingredient panel, and, you know, the first ingredient is cornflakes and or corn, whatever. And oats are way down the line. And this is a dishonesty that I don't understand why that's permitted, and I wonder how that could be changed.
I think that the recent Palm Coca-Cola case is actually very interesting when it comes to this, because this was a company, Coca-Cola, claiming that their juice had it was a pomegranate blueberry juice, but it had less than 1% pomegranate or blueberry juice in it.
And 0.3% pomegranate juice, 0.2% blueberry juice.
Yeah, I mean,
that's,
it was not
negligible.
Pomegranate. That's right. And so, you know, it's been interesting because that court case was taken all the way up to the Supreme Court. It was ruled in the 9th District that because the labeling technically met FDA laws, and FDA even intervened in this case at that level, that it could not be misleading. That we've never really believed. We know there's lots of misleading labels that still may technically meet the FDA definition, like natural, and yet they shouldn't be out there. But the Supreme Court ruled unanimously, and it was really a business-to-business decision. It's something made for Wall Street that has implications for Main Street. But what they ruled is that even if it meets FDA's definition, it can still be misleading, and they're letting the suit for misleading labeling proceed.
Thank you for your call. We have to take a little break. We'll be back with more calls, and we'll be looking at some other things like eggs and what free range means, things like that. My guest is Urvashi Rangan, Director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group for Consumer Reports. We are talking about labeling on today's Please Explain. Our number, 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with Urvashi Rangan, Director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group at Consumer Reports. We're talking about food labeling here on today's Please Explain segment. Many people look for some indications on eggs. You mentioned earlier that the animals were raised humanely. So it's obviously important to consumers. How can we know? Would free range be a good indication that a chicken or the eggs were raised humanely?
It sure would be nice if it did mean that. But unfortunately, it doesn't even mean anything close to that. Humanely raised has to do with a lot of things. Not only did they go outside or range freely, but were the conditions in the house kept hygienic? Were there space requirements for the birds? Could they see the light of day? But free range, which is actually also regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, only means they have the option to go outdoors and for no defined period every day.
Now we have ag-gag laws in some states, which make it almost impossible for us to find out whether people are abusing the animals.
It's pretty astonishing that now we're even less able to get in on farms, and it's illegal to see what's actually happening on them. And I think that really speaks to what are you hiding? And we're glad groups like the Humane Society are really pushing back on that to get rid of those ag gag laws.
What did your survey reveal about what people expect from meat and eggs and other animal products?
Well, people actually want their meat to be raised humanely. They want them humanely slaughtered. They don't want drugs or antibiotics used. They want to make sure the animals have space requirements and that they were treated fairly. And they want that verified. 92% want those conditions verified. And yet, so many humane claims that don't have certification behind them they just fall short of that. One gold standard label is the Animal Welfare Approved label. It requires pasture for every animal, and that you can't get their certification without it.
The antibiotics, should I assume that the meat has antibiotics unless there's a label that says otherwise?
Yes, you should assume that the meat probably came from animals raised on a daily cocktail of antibiotics. Now, the Food and Drug Administration has taken a baby step toward dealing with this, but we're in a public health crisis where antibiotics are becoming less effective, and we're seeing terribly resistant organisms in meat production. The Foster Farms recall alone is a lesson that should be learned. These salmonella strains that are so resistant have been around in Foster Farms plants for the last 13 years.
Amit from South Brunswick. You're on the air.
Hi. So my question is really around the sustainability impact of organic food. So your guest talked about sustainability. In my opinion, sustainability is a lot more than just health, but also the impact on environment. And what I struggle with is to understand if organic food and its impact on greenhouse gases and the environment is really as big as what we see on the other side. We're considering the shorter shelf life, considering the greater area or space needed to produce the same, get the same amount of yield, considering, you know, if everybody in this world started to live like the Americans live, you probably need more like 5, 6, 7 Earths to support that kind of lifestyle. And that is just not, I mean, in my opinion, sustainability is a lot more than just the health benefits of it. And I'd love to hear some comments from your guest on this topic.
So here, sustainability is a lot more than what organic currently has to mean. But to say organic means nothing or it's a scam is also not true. So, you know, we've got something in the area of gray, and what it needs is watchdogging from consumers like you and other people who have called in to actually say, we want better, we want more. We have the opportunity to do that. And here's the thing, whether you like organic or not, if you believe in a sustainable food production system, it's in all our interest to watchdog that label and make sure it stays high in meaning. When it doesn't exist in the marketplace, it's going to be a sad day for sustainable food production, and we're going to lose that side of things. So it's a fight, but a fight we should take on.
There's been a fight in many states over labeling genetically modified organisms or GMOs. Do other countries require labeling?
Oh, only about 64, Leonard, and including the European Union. And so the same companies that moan about not being able to use GMO labeling here or the disaffection that's going to happen, it's just simply not true. They do it in 64 other countries, and those are a lot of the same companies who are labeling here. Overwhelmingly, every time we ask consumers, more than 9 out of 10 want to know. They want to know, and they have a right to know. You know, if you cook something, if you smoke it, you have to label it as such. So how come if you genetically tinker with it, you don't have to put that label on?
Sometimes there's a pushback from the industry, as we see in milk cartons, where we're told that even though a hormone hasn't been given to the cows, it's safe to have that hormone in the milk.
Yeah, and therefore you shouldn't label it as having no hormone because you're suggesting that somehow safer. You know, the fact,
and yet people look for that notice because they want to know, what is the hormone again?
Exactly. I mean, I think that, look, people have a right to know how their food's produced. And the fact of the matter is, if you're giving animals hormones to ramp up their milk production, you're doing other things other than just a possible public health issue. Animals are milked 3 times a day. They have higher rates of mastitis, of disease, in which case they need to be treated more with antibiotics. So there's a lot of issues and a constellation of those that go beyond what the FDA is simply looking at when it comes to the use of that claim, or companies who are suing other companies to not use that claim.
According to the Consumer Reports survey, 92% of Americans want to know a food's country of origin. Is this a relatively new interest?
Well, it goes along, I think, with a lot of what people want to know. They want to know where their food was produced. And we've had very old tariff laws on the books since the 20s, 30s, and 40s that do make those requirements of a lot of food products. Where it became very contentious in the last 10 years was with what was called the Country of Origin Labeling Act. And we passed it here. What really precipitated the major controversies at the World Trade Organization were meat companies who were being required to use multiple country of origin labels produced in Canada, U.S., and Mexico. A lot of our meat is produced that way. Consumers ought to know about it.
How does that work? They don't keep on moving the cow around.
They do move the cows around, actually. They may be born in a certain place, slaughtered in another one, and graze in another one.
Sometimes isn't meat also sent abroad to be processed?
Yes.
Even though it could be made in USA, it's processed in China?
That's right. I mean, we've just green-lighted chicken being done that way. Shrimp's been done that way for quite some time. What are we doing? I mean, this is the way to increase greenhouse gases and make our food production system, to one caller's point, a lot more inefficient when it comes to energy use.
A listener wants to know how organic and healthier foods can be made affordable and more accessible to a wider market?
That's a great question, because I think like any product on the market that's new, there's a premium that goes with it. And as it scales up, it will come down in price. But there are ways you can get these types of food at a more economical cost. One way, of course, is to go to the farmers markets and buy your foods in season. Freeze them down so that you have those great organic blueberries in the winter.
It's also been pointed out that the larger farmers, the farmers who do industrial farming, get subsidies, while organic farmers tend not to.
Actually, subsidies go all the way around, but the proportion of subsidy going into conventional farming is just so huge and really dwarfs what goes in organic. What we need for organic farmers is more research and development so that they can find better alternatives for things where there are exemptions that are falling short of consumer expectations.
Recently, food stamps have become more widely accepted and used in green markets. You see that as a positive step?
Absolutely. Michelle Nishan, one of the chefs here in the New York area, has been a huge vanguard of that. And twice the value now of food stamps in New York City green markets. That's pretty amazing, too, making better food accessible to lower-income populations.
Let's take another call. Pete, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I'm really enjoying the show. You mentioned that certified organic farmers are not allowed to use most synthetic pesticides, and I'm wondering which synthetic pesticides they're allowed to use and why they're allowed to use any at all.
Yeah, this is a great question, and whether it's pesticides or other synthetic materials, yeah. Organic allows...
Go ahead.
Sorry. While the law says that synthetic materials are prohibited, there is this exemption that's built in to allow farmers to use certain things for a certain period of time. I will tell you that system is a bit broke down at this point, and it needs people's attention because the USDA is trying to weaken the regulations around that so it makes it easier for artificial ingredients and synthetic pesticides that are exempt right now to stay on in perpetuity, and we want that stopped. But with regard to the pesticide question, until very recently, tetracycline and streptomycin, two antibiotics, were being used as pesticides for apples and pear trees in organic production. That's one example.
The film Fed Up focuses on how much sugar is in processed foods that Americans eat every day. And it points out that on something like yogurt, the minimum daily requirement of most of the ingredients in yogurt are listed, but when you get to sugar, suddenly it's an empty space.
And wasn't it fascinating in that movie? It was illustrative of why. And there's huge lobby efforts that go on to prevent that from happening. It turns out in the 70s, the World Health Organization had it in their report about all of these nutritional requirements and that they should be labeled and that it should be disclosed. We in the U.S. squashed it, and that was due to lobby power of big industry groups.
Judy from Westbury, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, great show today. Really great show. I would just
It's
like
about
to mention,
time, don't you think, Judy?
Excuse me?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. I would just like to mention how far behind the United States is compared to the EU with food production. They were labeling GMOs in 1997. In 2006, they took out all of the antibiotics that would be used in humans in animal production to reduce resistance. You know, many people think that we're doing so great here and we're really trailing.
You know, it's absolutely true. And I just had a colleague, we work in an international consumer group, and my colleague from Germany wrote, because in this country, we use chlorine washes to dunk all of our poultry in before we finish the processing. We sort of do the cleanup at the end of the line, which is wrong. And this person asked me, because they're trying to push that in Europe, the use of chlorine washes, do we label? And I said, nope, we don't label for that here. She couldn't believe that. And I think that your points and that one are very illustrative of the progressiveness that Europeans have when it comes to food production.
It's been reported that seafood is often mislabeled. A fish is called something that it isn't. A more expensive fish. Whose responsibility is it to make sure that fish is labeled correctly?
Well, it's two agencies' responsibilities. Isn't that fun? It's always great when we bifurcate that responsibility. For country of origin labeling, it is the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For all other labeling of fish, it is the Food and Drug Administration. What's interesting in our our survey is that a lot of people seem savvy about fish labeling and where they're going to get misled. We want them to have that same savviness for natural.
A listener asks about titanium dioxide, a whitening ingredient in some dairy and non-dairy products that is called a naturally occurring mineral.
Yeah, well, so minerals can be mined, and you can't raise a mineral organically or anything, and so you can mine these things, but then they are highly processed ingredients, processed into nano size, and there are concerns around nanomaterials used, what that does in the environment. Inhalium titanium dioxide, incidentally, is a class 2B carcinogen.
Oh, well, that's great that they're putting it in my milk.
Don't inhale your powdered donut.
You've taken the survey. What are you planning to do with the results?
Well, we are launching a four-month campaign now against the natural label. We are going to be filing petitions with the government next week to ban the natural label. We're teaming up with Take Part, and at takepart.com/food-labels, you can sign the petition that we'll be submitting to FDA and USDA, and we'll keep that petition up for the next 4 months.
And we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Does the FDA have to change all of these things?
Well, there's been over 200 class action lawsuits in just the last couple of years on the natural label. And in one of those suits, the court said, hey, FDA, would you like to define this and stop tying up the courts? And the FDA respectfully said, no, we would not like to do that. So, you know, that's
fine. It doesn't
fine.
Matter whether there's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House.
It doesn't seem to,
the FDA seems to be nonpartisan.
That's a good way of putting it, and they've declined. So you know what? Taxpayers deserve more than this. If you don't want to define it, and actually we don't need to go through it again, we should focus on organic, just ban it, and so we can get rid of this green noise in the marketplace and let the labels that are really credible compete with one another.
Do you think surveys like yours show that people want better labels on their foods?
Absolutely.
Because I don't see people reading labels in the stores.
Well, the overwhelming majority of people, you know, wanted to support local farmers, for example, but there aren't a whole lot of labels out there. So I think people are starting to look for better practices, but don't maybe know how to quite find them all.
Urvashi Rangan is director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group for Consumer Reports. We've been talking about labeling and the results of a survey that Consumer Reports ran among consumers to find out what we really want. And it's kind of surprising just how at variance it is from the real world. Thank you so much for being on our show again, Urvashi. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Leonard. It's a pleasure for me, too.